Greetings to the brightest audience in America. This is not Bob Benyart. He is in Las Vegas right now doing a pro-life event. I am Jason Troyer, filling in for Bob, who is America's most popular, self-proclaimed, right-wing religious fanatic, homophobic, anti-choice talk show host. And the anti-choice part is what we're going to talk about today. Bob has mentioned on the show a few times about my op-ed piece that I wrote the day after the election. So the election was 1 week ago today, where Republicans lost, America lost, you know, not that they're the same thing, but the elections are always a bad day for a true Christian conservative, because putting us in office is very difficult to do, and even if we are elected, you're still electing people to rule over the people, and it's just a bad form of government, so there's really no way we can have a good day when it's election day. But we can have a good day every other day because we are not wrapped up in Republican politics. So if the Republicans lose, it's not that big a deal. Did I even mention my name? This is Jason Troyer, by the way. I did. Okay. So we're not wrapped up in the political system, but it is the system that we have right now. And so we need to do whatever we can, whether it's the political system or the church system or the public in general, whatever area of life we are in, we need to do our best and represent God as best we can in that avenue of life. And so I wrote this op-ed piece about South Dakota and why South Dakota's pro-life law passed or didn't pass, that it failed. And so I wanted to read you the op-ed. Why did South Dakota's anti-abortion referred law 6 fail? Was it too pro-life? No, it wasn't pro-life enough. How can you say that when there wasn't even, how can I say that when there's not even an exception for rape or incest in the law? Well, the flaw was not in the law, but in the marketing. Vote Yes for Life lost when they decided their strategy was to cast the mother as the victim of abortion and not the child. So their misguided efforts could better be described as pro-woman and not pro-life. While women are certainly victims of abortion, the campaign disregarded the true victim of abortion and tried to get sympathy for the lesser victim. When they focused on the lesser victim, therefore, they had less moral authority. And I want to stop the op-ed right there, because the criticism that I've received has been, well, the mother's the victim too. And I don't dispute that. In this paragraph I just read, while women are certainly victims of abortion, apparently they didn't read that paragraph. But the biggest criticism I have been getting is the percentage of victimization, and we need to focus X amount percentage on who is the victim and so forth. And so the battle is in the pro-life movement, who's the victim of abortion, which is to me stunning that 30 years after abortion was legalized, we have to argue about who the victim of abortion is. All right, so let me continue with the op-ed. So they must have been resigned to the fact that the undecided didn't care about the baby and that we can't change their mind, meaning the undecided voters in South Dakota will never be persuaded by the baby argument, the humanity of the baby and so forth. And I think that because we've been fighting this battle for so long, for 30 years, that this strategy doesn't work. And so we have to try a new strategy, and the baby strategy doesn't work, and so let's try the mother strategy. And certainly abortion harms the mother, but the mother generally walks willing into the abortion clinic to be victimized. She might walk in a little bit blindly, she might not know exactly what is going to happen, but generally they go in with their eyes open. And so I think it's wise to analyze what we've been doing, because for 30 years we haven't won yet. So we shouldn't just bang our heads up against the wall forever and say, well, we're right, and therefore we're just going to keep saying the same thing over and over again. We need to analyze our failures, no doubt. But the failure is not in making the baby the victim. That's a fact, and we need to promote that, and we need to show that. So let's go back to the op-ed piece. There was a time in America when most people didn't care about the fate of a slave. Yet when people finally realized the humanity and victimization of a whole group of people, they did do the right thing. First by rescuing only a few through the Underground Railroad, which is where America is at in the abortion battle. The next step, through the Emancipation Proclamation, was granting freedom to all men, which came for the babies, which will come for the babies, with the reversal of Roe v. Wade. Today in America, slavery is unthinkable, as I pray abortion will someday be. When Vote Yes for Life cast the mother as the victim to be saved, they had a problem. What about rape and incest? They were teaching the voters to have sympathy for the mother. So when these topics came up, it would have seemed cruel to their victim, the mother, to force her to give birth to an unwanted child. How could they work around this problem? Well, the pro-lifers produced a television ad promoting the use of the Plan B pill, and that is a human pesticide, because it stops the implantation of a fertilized egg. So it is an abortion. Not all the time, but it can cause an abortion. So the television ad called Plan B among the best options. So again, with the op-ed on why the pro-life initiative in South Dakota failed. How could a pro-life group get so confused? They promoted the wrong victim. Instead of depicting the mother as the victim, they should have educated the public about the humanity and rights of the child. When rape and incest came up, the sympathy would rightly still be on the baby, and people could see that the violence toward the victim is not the solution to the problem, it is the problem. And so, if you think of the sympathy that would either be for the mother or for the child, think of it as an old scale, where it would tip one way or the other. And so, if you're teaching the public to have sympathy for the mother, then that becomes their victim. When rape and incest come up, you're adding a tragedy to that side of the scale. And so, therefore, it will tip the balance. So, continuing the last paragraph of the op-ed. So how do we as pro-lifers continue the fight? We must show America the true victim of abortion. Every ultrasound shown to a new mother and father chips away at the lie of abortion. Every 4D ultrasound is like a sledgehammer to the foundation of the abortionist evil empire. Every beautiful pre-born picture or grisly post-abortion picture is like a wrecking ball to the lie that this baby is just a blob of tissue. The walls of abortion will not fall tomorrow, but they will fall if we stay focused on the true victim of abortion, the baby. And so, as I mentioned earlier, I think a lot of this is battle fatigue. We haven't won yet, so we must be doing something wrong. And I don't have a problem analyzing our strategy. And if new technology comes up and we can change our strategy slightly because of this new technology, then great. And education is not the end-all, be-all, and that's how we're going to solve abortion. I think it's important to educate the people because I think a lot of people are misguided, but education is not going to be the salvation of that child. Because when America was pro-life, when the American Medical Association condemned abortion and condemned abortionists, we had no idea what was going on inside of the womb. The only way they had an idea of what was going on is when a woman miscarried and the baby was delivered prematurely. But today, when we have ultrasounds, 4D ultrasounds, we have cameras actually inside the womb and we can see inside, the country is less pro-life than it once was. So I understand it's not necessarily a problem with education, because we are much more educated about the development of the baby today, and yet we are less pro-life. Now, the strategy in South Dakota was, again, pro-woman and not pro-life, because they thought, well, we already have the pro-life vote wrapped up, so let's try to get more people on our side with this new tactic. Now, the abortion ban in South Dakota would never have worked in Colorado, because we are not pro-life. South Dakota is much more pro-life than Colorado is. And so this complete ban, even if we had the money to educate the public, it just wouldn't have worked in Colorado. I think it would have worked in South Dakota if they would have educated the public as to the development of the baby. And they did have some good commercials. Unfortunately, they had that disastrous Plan B commercial, but they did have some 4D ultrasound commercials, which you can see on VoteYesForLife.com, and those were great. And I went up there and I volunteered my time, my efforts, my resources to help get that law passed. So I'm not against the law. There's stuff I would have changed, certainly, but it was a good enough law that I wanted to support it and I wanted it to pass. And then it goes up to the Supreme Court at that point, no doubt, because the pro-aborts aren't just going to let that stand. They would challenge it in court. It would work its way up to the Supreme Court. And, well, We don't know what would happen there. Certainly, the justices on the Supreme Court are not pro-life. So, who knows what they would have done. And we may never know, because I don't think abortion is going to be solved through the court system. It was given to us. We have to deal with it now because of the court system. And I don't think it's going to be solved through the court system. I think it's going to be solved by chipping away at Planned Parenthood. It's a David and Goliath situation right now. And if we don't weaken Planned Parenthood, if we don't weaken the abortion industry, if we don't cast them as the enemy and show how despicable they are, then we're never going to win. So attacking the pro-abortion industry with all different tactics and different scenarios, different weapons, I think is the way to do it. And it's death by a thousand cuts, because I don't think one thing is going to do it. Life Dynamics in Denton, Texas did a wonderful thing. They got the phone numbers of abortion clinics from around the country. They called up the abortion clinics, and this girl who sounded very young said, well, I'm a 13-year-old, I'm a 14-year-old, 15-year-old, whatever, and said, my boyfriend, who's 23, 24, 25, wants me to have an abortion. Well, right there, that's statutory rape, and as a mandatory reporter, these healthcare facilities, these abortion mills, are supposed to report that to the police. But over and over again throughout these abortion clinics around the country, they showed the girl or told the girl how to get around the mandatory reporting of the statutory rape. So when you come in, don't tell us your age, don't tell us the age of your boyfriend, and we'll take care of the problem. And so they were covering up statutory rape. So that's not the one big roundhouse blow that's going to bring down the abortion industry. The abortion industry has for years now been selling baby body parts. So after they kill the child, a lot of times they don't just throw the baby in the trash can or throw the baby down the garbage disposal. They'll dissect the baby and they will remove the body parts and sell it for medical research. And that wasn't the roundhouse blow that knocked out the abortion industry. And so we need to get that more and more out there, that this is a despicable industry that is doing this to kids. Not only killing the kids, but dissecting the kids and doing experiments and all this. And, of course, we don't have the media on our side, so it's much harder to get the message out. But that's what has to get out there, is that these people are despicable from head to toe. They'll kill children. They'll dissect the kids. And it's just gruesome. So I wrote that op-ed, and I wasn't expecting all praise, because everybody has a different opinion than me. I am a unique individual, and so therefore my words are not anyone else's words. But I did get some praise from certain people, and I enjoyed that. Everyone likes to be accepted. And so my op-ed was the letter of the week at worldnetdaily.com, which was very cool. It's on the front page of Operation Save America's website. And, of course, Flip Benham is a friend of mine, and we have a lot of the same ideas on how to fight abortion. And Flip is a hero of mine, and I'm thrilled that he agreed with the article. But I did get a letter from a guy named Steve who runs a major pro-life group, and I wanted to read you his critique of my op-ed piece. So Steve begins his letter, and I wrote about a one-page letter, my op-ed, and Steve wrote back a three-page response to my letter. So, okay. So he had a lot to say. So here's what Steve had to say. And so it begins. The Monday morning quarterbacking of the so-called experts who haven't managed to get abortion banned in their own states, yet decide to pick on the South Dakota pro-lifers who lost their battle. My response to that, and then I emailed him back my response, paragraph by paragraph, and my response to that was, is anyone allowed to make a comment or offer advice? After a loss, shouldn't we ask what went wrong? And he uses some debating techniques throughout his piece. The first one that he used here was, well, you can't criticize unless your own state has banned abortion. And he knows perfectly well no state has banned abortion. And so therefore it immunizes him and it immunizes the South Dakotans from any critique at all. And later on in the piece, he says, I, like most of the people, agree, da-da-da-da-da. And so he casts himself in the majority. And so by being in the majority, he's obviously right. Instead of making his points and showing evidence for them, he uses some debating techniques, which I thought was kind of amusing. So he continues his critique. This backbiting has been a waste of time and money for 33 years, and I think most of us have had enough of this game of one-upsmanship. And there you go. That's the, I think most of us have had enough of this game of one-upsmanship. So I responded to that. Iron sharpening iron isn't backbiting. Your response to me could be seen as one-upsmanship, but I prefer to see it as allies collaborating to destroy the enemy. So everybody has a difference of opinion, and, you know, Steve has a difference of opinion with me, and so there's no sense in me getting and going personally at him. So I ended that with, I prefer to see this as allies collaborating to destroy the enemy. So he continues his critique. But let's get into the meat of your argument. The abortion debate has been, for 33 years, one side claiming it favors women and the other side saying it wants to protect babies before birth. Both are laudable goals. Now, before we continue, he's saying something morally neutrally. One side claiming it favors women. Well, they claim that, but it's a lie. And he should not fall into that trap of repeating their mantra. Because he says both are laudable goals. And I understand what he means, but he shouldn't say what he said. And my critique of his little paragraph is coming up, and I explain that to him. So both are laudable goals, but our insistence on absolutely ignoring the social and financial conditions that drive women to have abortions in the first place has always made us look out of touch. Again, just repeating the mantra of Planned Parenthood and the pro-abortion industry. To women having abortions, to abortion advocates whom we want to persuade to be pro-life, and to the public in general. So my response to that was, your above paragraph is morally neutral. I know you don't think abortion is morally neutral, so let me illustrate my point by inserting another moral evil. And so I use slavery. So I rewrote his paragraph from above. The slavery debate has been, for 100 years, one side claiming it favors farmers and the other side saying it wants to protect slaves. Both are laudable goals, but our insistence on absolutely ignoring the social and financial conditions that drive farmers to have slaves in the first place has always made us look out of touch. To the farmers having slaves, to slavery advocates whom we want to persuade to be abolitionists, and to the public in general. The rewritten statement above is unthinkable today, and our goal should be to make the original paragraph as equally unthinkable and awkward to someone in the future. Farmers today still go through hard times, but they never consider slavery as a solution, first because of the legality, and second because of the humanity. And so slavery is unthinkable today, and we need to make abortion unthinkable today as well. And so no farmer going through hard times says, well, I should go and buy a slave at the local market. It doesn't make any sense. And so the argument of hard times, and we have to understand the socioeconomic impacts that women have, that sort of thing. And this comes up recurring throughout his email. So we'll cover it from different angles coming up. He continues his critique of my op-ed. If we truly want to eliminate abortion, we must do two things. Well, these are two things that South Dakota didn't do, so he's obviously criticizing South Dakota. But, all right, if we want to truly eliminate abortion, we must do two things. First, we must make it illegal, but we must also address the needs of the pregnant woman by eliminating the socioeconomic and other reasons that drive women to have abortions. Well, they didn't address that in South Dakota. They did the illegal part, but they didn't do anything to address the socioeconomic or other reasons that drive women to have abortions. So my response to that is, again, we need to make abortion unthinkable no matter what hard times come to a family. During the Depression, families were not killing their born children to save money. It was unthinkable. I know this is an absolutist position, but this is the goal. Jesus said, we will always have the poor. We can't allow poverty to be an excuse for abortions. Now, to go from the abstract of we'll always have the poor to the concrete, how do we deal with that? Instead of using it as an excuse for abortions, how do we deal with it in a concrete manner? CPCs, Crisis Pregnancy Centers, offer wonderful help to desperate moms, and that help sometimes is enough to save the child and the mother's life. I love CPCs. Now, he keeps bringing up socioeconomic in his critique of me, and it occurred to me that he hasn't been outside of an abortion clinic for very long. Because when I am sidewalk counseling at an abortion clinic, I don't see the poverty that he is trying to say is the root cause of abortion. I see people go into Planned Parenthood at 20th and Vine here in Denver with dealer tags on the back windows of their cars. They just bought a new car, and instead of returning the car and getting rid of the car, they want to get rid of their child. And so it's not a poverty issue, it's a lifestyle issue. I don't want this child because my lifestyle will change. Not because I can't afford the child, it's because I don't want to afford the child. The cars in Planned Parenthood's parking lot are not rusted through hunks of junk, and these people just can't afford this child. So the socioeconomic argument is a false argument. So let's continue with his critique. To end abortion, we need to begin speaking a new language. Wonderful. And I think this goes back to battle fatigue. Because we haven't won yet, we must be doing something wrong, and so therefore we have to change. So if anything, vote yes for life. Got it. Because they took the approach that the pro-life movement needs to begin taking if it wants to move beyond the stalemate that currently exists. Now later in his critique, he says, we're making incredible progress. But here, because he wants to make his point, he says, well, there's a stalemate. And certainly we are not gaining the way we hope we would be gaining because thousands of babies die every day. And I would agree with the stalemate portion of that because while we are influencing people, it is not coming at a rapid enough pace for me because today 4,000 babies die, tomorrow 4,000 babies die, and so on and so on. And so we can't be happy with our gains because while we're gaining momentum, babies are losing their lives. So my response to the pro-lifers up there, got it, and having a new language, so forth. A new language. The pro-life movement is by definition against the killing of a baby. Mothers don't die by the thousands every day in abortion clinics. Your tactic is pro-woman, not pro-life. Women suffer from abortions, but babies die. We should and do bring up the collateral damage of abortion. Depression, drug and alcohol abuse, child abuse, infertility, breast cancer, and so on, but that should not be our primary focus. And that's the critique that I've received, is that, well, abortion hurts women. I don't deny that at all, but there is a greater victim and a lesser victim. So, continuing Steve's critique, people have heard the pro-baby arguments time and time again. While advances in medical technology, such as 4D ultrasounds and fetal pain research, are definitely helping the cause, some abortion advocates can hear all the fetal development information in the world and still maintain their erroneous notion that abortion should be legal. My response to that is, I agree. The abortionist knows more about abortion than anyone else, and that knowledge doesn't stop him. That being said, education will change some people's minds and over time make the personhood of the preborn undeniable. No plan is perfect. Atheists still exist despite the evidence. And so we're not going to be able to convince everybody, no doubt. Education is not the only answer. We need to soften the hearts of Americans. We need to return them to biblical values and the way God wants us to interact with each other, to have mercy on children, that he hates hands that shed innocent blood, that sort of thing. So education alone is not the answer, but it needs to be a primary motivation, is that we need to educate these people. All right. Polls bear this out time after time. Virtually every survey that has been conducted in the last 10 years show that the large majority of Americans regard abortion as a taking of a human life and a morally wrong decision. Yet there are still pro-abortion in terms of the law. He asks why. Because they continue to buy into the NARAL and Planned Parenthood notion that abortion is pro-woman. So he's asking the question, why aren't we winning? We know that the abortion kills the baby, it's taking of a human life, as he says, and yet he can't figure out why we haven't made abortion illegal. He asked the question. After 30 years, he still doesn't know. And so my response to him is, the reason is the public has been taught to be more sympathetic to the woman than to the baby. The butchers have done a better job selling abortion as a women's rights issue, and so the sympathy is with her. If we don't shift the sympathy to the victim, we will never win. And now our tactic is to cast the mom as the victim, which, of course, is the same as the pro-aborts. And again, the sympathy is misplaced. So we are running out of time, and I wanted to read one thing that was just infuriating to me. He continues talking about the mother as the victim, and that Groups like Silent No More and Operation Outcry are putting a real face on abortion. My response to him was, gory post-abortion pictures put a real face on abortion. Women definitely suffer from abortion, but the children are dying. So the Silent No More, the mothers who come out and say, I regret my abortion, I don't think that's the answer. He says that women after women who claim to have abortion as they claim that will be the greatest thing since sliced bread, we can finally allow women to come forward and tell their personal stories of how abortion affected them physically and so forth. My response to him was that the pro-abortion will always have more women who say abortion is great and freeing until we convince them that they committed murder and they should be ashamed. 50 million dead babies. We've had 50 million dead babies, and we only have a few hundred openly regretful moms. So that's not the answer. But again, he wants to change the answer. His whole pro-mother and focus on the mother as the victim is a critique and a Monday morning quarterbacking of the pro-life movement in general, and yet he criticizes me, again, judging me for judging others, as Bob always, you know, goes back to back and forth. So he said that Vote Yes for Life took the rug out from under the pro-abortion arguments by saying that they cared about women too. Even the abortion advocates admit they have a good strategy and don't know how to combat it. Now, if you're agreeing with the pro-aborts, that might be a problem. Not that it is a problem, but you should understand if the pro-aborts say, oh, you have a good strategy, you shouldn't use that. Maybe that's not the best strategy. Now, South Dakota did, I think, one brilliant thing. They attached a study, and they attached that to the law on how abortion hurt women to try to undercut the argument that abortion is pro-woman, but that shouldn't be the primary focus. And it is stunning to me that after 30 years, we don't know who the victim of abortion is, and other state pro-life organizations, state right-to-life organizations, and national right-to-life have contacted people that I know and said, you know, what's going on? Who, you know, why is this guy saying what he's saying? And it's amazing that the pro-lifers don't know who to support. And so don't support National Right to Life. They have no idea what they're doing. They are a pro-choice organization. So find a pro-life organization, investigate them, find out what they believe, and support them. And of course, support Bob Inyart Live. We are here fighting day in and day out, so please support us.